Next up on the Old Mo, we're going to look at borders and immigration as represented in a new animated film, Coco. Joe Clement and Jan Hocken review the 2017 animated film Coco, which blends an age-old story of a child's torn affection for family and the wider world with a trauma narrative about a family wound. They consider the deep emotional resonance as themes of borders, family separation, the toxicity of worldly wealth, and integrating alienated aspects of ourselves. Here's Jan.
Pixar's newest animated film, Coco, released in 2017, was meant to be a love letter to Mexico. Some reviewers actually have called Coco subversive, rebellious, for celebrating Mexican culture in the current political climate, at a time when President Trump is trying to build his wall between the countries. Musician Camila Lara says the movie sends an alternative vision. "This is showing the Mexico I like," he says, "the Mexico that is creative and fun and exciting and full of culture and culture, not the Mexico full of violence and the narco Mexico that Trump so famously is trafficked in." The movie has a Latino cast. It's full of Mexican music, culture, and folklore, including some of the traditions around the Day of the Dead. And it premiered in Mexico last fall, where it's gone to become the number one film of all time. The story follows 12-year-old Miguel Rivera, who yearns to be a great musician, but he has to hide his ambition and his guitar from his family of shoemakers who don't approve. No music, he's continually reminded by relatives who believe music cursed the family. And the film unfolds as Miguel attempts to escape this curse and the binding ties of family. So, Joe, what do you make of this central theme? Because, of course, the story of a child, typically a boy, who attempts to emancipate himself from binding kinship ties, pursuing possibilities on the horizon beyond the kinship fold, is a very old one, and often there are particular Western modern versions of this story. But let's start with the story we see in this film, Coco.
So this is, in a lot of ways, a trauma story. It is a story about going beyond the family's boundaries, but there in this story is a trauma which helps to, I think, kind of literalize the feeling of just total abandonment and upset that separation entails, both for the person going away and the people that they're going away from. And in trying to search out his roots in his quest to become a musician, Miguel is kind of going into his family's history for his family's sake, and he doesn't change anything except what was understood about the past. And there is this very kind of beautiful resolution in the end where Miguel's pursuit of music and his family member who was a musician become reintegrated into the family, into its own story and living conception of itself, so that they can have both the outward-seeking individual respecting part of their family and then the tradition and their memory of that.
And some anthropologists would say that a difference between the pre-capitalist traditional story where the child explores a world beyond the kinship system and has some tests of various kind, often this is a male story of a quest to test yourself beyond the world of familial obligation. And then the denouement is that you return to the family, you return to the fold. In the Western canon, often the boy leaves and does not return. So you have here this, spoiler alert, the boy does return at the end to the familial fold. And so it carries a lot of that, the pre-capitalist commitments to familial ties that we see in immigrants also who are in this film. There's a lot of border crossing on the Day of the Dead that evokes our knowledge today of how difficult the border and the passport control is for people who are stopped at the borders, poor people from the South. And so the film works with border agents in a playful, animated way, but it's it of course is read through the present where there is painful trauma happening for families separated at the border. And so the film, it has a kind of eerie timeliness in that way. And I think the way in which the boys' quest and those who've departed still have obligations to the living, and the living have obligations to those who've gone before, is something you see in immigrant communities here. How many people, immigrant communities, send much of what they make back home across the border? How many immigrant communities around the world are supported by immigrants here? And that's not the capitalist ideal of the family, you know, where the children are much more expected to move on in the world and not return. So yet the film, I think, does carry endorse in a way the right of children to follow their dreams, to leave. But it's a very ambivalent film in that way, and I think expresses a lot of the ambivalence that many people feel about the right to pursue your dream and to leave people behind, and the trauma, particularly of men who abandon their families, which was the central, as you said, the trauma of, that the film starts with.
And that's what's so interesting about the film. Another spoiler alert. Miguel decides that this famous musician, Ernesto de la Cruz, who is from his hometown, which is named after the patron saint of musicians, is his great-great-grandfather, and that explains what happened in his family. There's this guitar that matches a photo that he has off the ofrenda, the headless photo. And once he gets stuck in the land of the dead, he thinks that, oh, my family here is still not going to accept me as a musician and give me their blessing so I can return to the land of the living. I will go to my family member who is a musician. And what he ends up discovering about Ernesto de la Cruz is that he stole his great-great-grandfather's songs and murdered him. And he does this by way of meeting his great-great-grandfather unwittingly. What he comes to realize about Ernesto de la Cruz is that this vanity, this very vain man who will kill him, this is what his family feared he'd become. It's what he ended up valorizing for so long. And then he comes to realize that, no, there is a certain kind of detached from others, a very individualistic notion of this worldliness.
He has to de-idealize the object of his search, and that there was something true in the admonitions of the mother and the grandmothers, that there was something. It wasn't only a prohibition based on their neurotic overreaction, but that there was something destructive about the lure of fame.
Yeah, and Ernesto de la Cruz kills Miguel's great-great-grandfather, Hector, and so there was no possibility of reconciling, of forgiving for the initial time that he leaves. Ultimately, the film gets back to that place, but it's after he's died. But then it manifests in the family with the reintegration of just allowing music around, and it's not just Miguel. There's other people in the family who play music. It's a way of resolving that tension that doesn't go either or. It's how do we make space for change and for newness.
Yeah, and it ends with forgiving but not forgetting, you know, playing or exploring some of the conflict about people you love who let you down. This is Jan Hawken and Joe Clement talking this morning about the animated film Coco, and I would like to talk about the title of the film, which is about the grandmother who is in a state of dementia, kind of absent. It's not clear whether initially she's depressed or suffering dementia. And the film is named after her. And then at the end, she speaks. And I think in the reviews, focusing so much on Miguel the boy, who's very enchanting in this film, the matrilineal aspect of the film as it's represented can get kind of lost, particularly as you see this, the very harsh grandmother, you know, disciplining the boy, but also hugging him and holding him tight, and how that practice of holding your children tight, but also disciplining them, comes out of a maternal authority grounded in the material conditions of life. Throughout much of human history until the rise of industrial capitalism, households were economic units of production, and the authority of mothers was grounded in the survival of kinship systems in their communities that were productive units, as well as places where children were raised. And with the rise of capitalism, the authority of women within the household was greatly devalued because production no longer was so grounded in the family. And so you see here a version of authority passed from mother down it's still a patriarchal larger society, but matrilineal in the sense of women carry authority passed on through their skills in as producers. But I think part of the resonance of the film was the way in which many households around the world still do have considerable female authority located within that family because women are producers. But that also, and the disciplinary aspect of that maternal authority is strengthened by the threat of all of the call of capitalism, the lure of wealth and fame beyond the community. And it's very much a cautionary tale on that level that still, I think, resonates with people.
I want to respond to what you said about Coco and just notice also how she is one of the only two people in this story who actually knew Hector. And in a certain way, Imelda and the memory that Imelda as the mother in that situation passed down ends up being the one with all the pain of hate, and that hate being the fuel, the prohibition, while Coco remembers her father as a child can only remember their father, and she probably maybe heard things from her mother, but
and she received something from him.
She did the song and you know Hector the in version of the Land of the Dead, if someone in the living forgets you and there's no one else to carry on your stories, then you disappear, the final death, they put it. And this is going to happen to Hector because his picture has been taken off of the family ofrenda for so long. And so getting back for Miguel is also about getting this picture back onto the ofrenda, about letting Mama Coco know that her father loved her. And the way that she kind of comes to in the end is, for me, very much a matter of finally coming to terms with, like, what happened with her papa, and really getting a message from her papa. And that's what Miguel says, you know, your father wanted you to have this. And like Miguel earlier in the film, who was admonished by his grandmother for having a secret he kept from the family, Mama Coco has her own secret, which is kind of the complement to this secret that is coming out about the family and about Miguel.
I think one reading could be that the younger grandmother is more frightened of the world and holding things together than an earlier generation who still received something in her case, the father who was still together enough to give to his daughter, and that had a kind of psychological validity to it, that people who live under conditions where maybe parents leave or suffer in various ways, but they have something to give their children that they can hold tight in the world, versus children who come into adulthood under conditions where life is much harder. And of course, we're seeing those differences played out all the time in the world. Children suffering more trauma than they can bear, and parents not being able to give as much to their children as the children need to hold on. And our government now is very much producing trauma for people.
Yeah, I mean, this film is all about generational trauma and how it reproduces itself.
Yeah.
Not necessarily with a sociological perspective, but just how it can travel through generations and it have this kind of practical concrete. We see what's happening and how it keeps reproducing itself, but nonetheless kind of elusive and intangible.
And I also think it's very difficult to talk with children about death, and a lot of religions perpetuate forms of terrorism about hell. You're burned in hell if you don't abide by the faith, which I consider a form of psychological terrorism, to tell children that, that there's a being is going to torture you forever if you don't obey. There's none of that in this film. It really is a kind of secular film in a way. It's about how the people who die are held, live only as long as the memories of people who hold them in mind, and that we have an obligation not only to remember the dead in some sentimental way, but to remember what they've taught us. And this is about what do we have to know about the kind of the warning signs in the world and the cautionary tales of people who've gone before. So it's a debt to them. And yet the old aren't over romanticized either in this film, because they also were fools in many cases. So there's an incredible variety of people in the Land of the Dead. And it's a quite remarkable film for coming out of a profit-driven industry like Pixar, owned by Disney. But I think perhaps is a response to the country getting browner.
And whatever its limits, we think that you should go see this film. But try to see it for free. You can get it through the Multnomah County Library, and it's going to be showing a number of times in the parks. Go to Portland Parks and Rec and look for free movies in the park, and look for Coco. It's showing a couple times in July and August. This has been Joe Clement and Jan Hocken talking about Coco.